The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's do it at the same time.
Oh. I didn't know that.
I know.
Is that a new thing?
Yeah, I just changed it when you did it different.
Okay, you want to try it again?
Bayonets! Bayonets to the ready!
No!
3, 2, 1.
Good morning! Yay!
Oh my gosh.
Wow, what a team.
So you've joined We the People Radio, your Sunday morning spot for fun and frivolity, and then sometimes things that make your head explode.
On KCNR 1460.
They already knew that because they already tuned in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry.
Say AM just for fun.
I'm not doing it.
Almost had you on that one.
Hey, we got a great show today.
We do.
Yeah.
So you're joining Aaron, Bill, Bob, your perennial cast of characters here. And you can reach us online, actually. That's kind of a great way to do this program because it is Sunday morning. And people don't really call in very much because they're mostly doing other stuff or working in the yard or hanging out drinking coffee in their slippers. But chat room is at wethepeopleradio.us. And I know for a fact Robert was working on that page last night at 11:30-ish. So it's all up and running and set, and we've got archives back to like October of 2010 or something crazy.
Oh yeah, we're antiques.
We got tons of stuff. Right. I found a guy from 2012, January of 2012, that's going to come on with us. I think next week actually. I was kind of hoping I would see an email back from him, but I don't have one yet. And that is Israel Stefanski. Is he Stefanski? Hold on. Why is my mouse working? Got to click to a different page. Yeah, I was right. He is in Israel, and that his name spelled differently. But he's proactiveglobalsecurity.com. So we'll get an update from what's going on over there in Israel. And that should be next week. And the week after, we have the ambassador to the Holy See. For those of you that are non-Catholics and non-readers, that is the Pope. So he used to be the ambassador, actually. He's the former ambassador. So that ought to be kind of interesting based on what's been going on the world stage. So we got 2 weeks of world stage coming up.
Yeah.
And we're going to ease into it by going through Canada.
Right. And then on the second hour, before we do that, we're going to have a little update on the fires up north. And for you folks, have you ever wondered what happens to, let's say, supplies that they don't use that they ordered for the fires?
Water, Gatorade,
yeah,
toilet paper.
I'm not going to ruin it for you, but you need to stay tuned for that because that's I think that's going to be a big story. So we have that for you. We have an update on the fires. We have an update on State of Jefferson. We got a lot of stuff in the second hour. And this hour we have
Shauna Holmes.
Shauna Holmes.
And let's see, I'm just going to read what's on here, and then she can tell us the fun stuff because, you know, we never get the really fun stuff. But, you know, actually, before I say that, I should give really a big vote of thanks to Stephen Manfredi from the Manfredi Strategy Group in Alexandria, Virginia. He has all of a sudden, he just sends me emails and he says, "Hey, how'd you like to have this person on the show?" I love this guy.
Yeah.
I think I met him when I was back in Virginia. In fact, I'm sure I did. If nothing else, we're email correspondents, but he knows some great people working on great stuff. And so today we veer back into Obamacare. Seems like everybody thinks it's, you know, it's done. But I think
and this is as bad as it's going to get.
I think
so
with our
worry.
Potential flip of the Senate, it gets worse. And the cost is all getting ready to mushroom up.
Well,
so
we've all adjusted to it now, so it's okay. It's not as bad as we thought.
Everybody's paying more, getting less. It's all good. It's all good.
It's good.
Yeah.
How many folks out there have had their have gotten a letter here just recently that their hospital is no longer taking your insurance?
Oh, yeah, that's a biggie now.
Yeah, I've heard, and big corporations are getting it too. So, little, just trickling in the effects of this.
Not fun for anybody.
No.
Well, Shauna's been kind of sounding the alarm here. She's a patient who fled Canada to seek life-saving medical treatment in the United States. So for all those people that believe the lie that it was going to be just like the Canadian system and everyone there loves it.
Oh, they love it up there.
That wasn't exactly true. She's a leading patients' rights advocate, and in Canada, she's the constitutional challenger in a case to give citizens the right to purchase private health insurance. Yeah, so you're going to try to get... Shauna, you're going to try to get away from the government system.
We're working on it.
Nice.
<Yeah. laughs>
You're going retro.
Yes. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. See, we're just going to go your way, and you're going to go our way, and then pretty soon we're all going to have to move to Canada.
Well, good luck, because as it is right now, there's not an awful lot of Americans coming over to Canada to get health care, unlike the reverse. So, you know, this is something, it's just such an important topic that still has to be discussed.
When was your situation? When did you have all this?
Well, when I became very ill was in 2005. And, and I've been fighting it ever since. And you think fighting an insurance company is a lot of fun? Well, wait till you try to take on the government, because you certainly get a lot less, and it's a lot more expensive. So I've been battling it a long time, and spending an awful lot of time in the United States speaking about my story.
Yeah, no kidding. So before we went crazy and, started destroying our own healthcare system, back in the day, how did it work? Did you guys come here? Did you come here like on vacation and then just find a doctor and pay cash, or?
No, what happened was with me is I actually started to get really sick, and the worst thing for me at that time was I started to go blind. I lost 3/4 of my vision in one eye and half my vision in the other. And I went to see my optometrist, which is one of these doctors that the government has not taken over yet, and they don't want to pay for is what it comes for. It's not covered under your insurance. So I was able to call up him and get an appointment right away. And he right away knew that I had a tumor that was pressing on my optic nerve just by the pattern of blindness that I was experiencing. And again, I didn't panic because I'm one of the fortunate Canadians that actually have a family doctor. In the city that I live in alone of about 500,000 people, 33,000 do not have family doctors. And so I went to see my family doctor, and she said, you need to see a couple of specialists. And again, I hadn't panicked until she started making the phone calls. And I was going to be 6 months to see one doctor and hopefully 4 months to see the other. And that was just to get a diagnostic testing and all that sort of stuff done.
And at that point, you're thinking, oh, it's no big deal. I'm only going blind. I mean, it's not like it's time sensitive.
I'm on the list.
Well, I kind of call my ignorance is bliss stage, when I sort of look back and think, I really did not realize how sick I was. And, I figured we could get this fixed. And you kind of get numb. You go into kind of a numb stage when you hear these things. And a good friend of mine from the States said to me, this is crazy. You need to see somebody right away. You need to get a different doctor. And in Canada, we can't do that. So, and this, to be quite honest, is the most embarrassing part of my story, is that I'm one of these Canadians that felt and was told and was raised to believe that the American system was a horrific medical system, and at least we didn't have the American system.
Uh-huh.
And so I was so desperate that I decided I would try even the American system.
Interesting.
And so I traveled to the United States, and the second most embarrassing part of my story is the first two doctors I saw were actually Canadian doctors.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So it's not like we don't have the talent. It's not like we're not, our doctors aren't trained. It's not that they're not capable. They just have their hands tied. And they have their hands tied by the government on what they can do.
Now that you've had this system for how long now?
Almost all my life. I will confess here live on air that I'm 50. And so probably
Bill's
for about 45 years, the government has taken over our health care. And at first, because I know this is what you're hearing quite often in the media, is that, let this settle down and, 4 or 5 years people will forget what all the hubbub was about. And we were in bliss for a couple of years with it. But you have to understand that the whole size of Canada is the population of the state of California. So it's not like we're an overly populized nation. But what we do have is this this problem that we have. We don't have enough money, and that's what happens as you run out of money. And the answer isn't pouring more money into it.
Well, I mean, I'm curious.
It just feeds the bureaucrats.
I'm curious. You say that the overwhelming sentiment was our system was worse, even after 50 years. Why would they? I guess it
because
must have something good.
Because if people thought it was better, they'd want it.
Yeah, I mean, why was that? Why were people thinking that if they had these long wait times and lack of doctors and so on?
Because what happens, and unfortunately, I think unfortunately for Canadians, and I also believe unfortunately for Americans, is that Canadians are very protective of our health care. We like to think, it's almost like we wear it proudly that, you know, well, we have socialized medicine. You know, every single person in Canada is covered. They are insured. And until you're facing a life or death situation, or you have a family member or something that affects you, that you are suffering and you are met with these delays, you know, we tended to stick our head in the sand and say that our system was far superior. Also, what we would often get over the years is the trickle-down stories of people going bankrupt in the United States because they couldn't afford their treatment. And, you know, we had images of Americans lying dying in the street with absolutely zero health care and cold, heartless hospitals turning you away at the door and refusing treatment, which I've since found is not the case.
Is everybody in Canada covered by your plan?
If you live in, like I'm in the province of Ontario, I live in between Toronto and Niagara Falls, and if you live in Ontario for 3 months, you are covered under our plan. And what the plan does is it covers you basically, you know, and this is the other misconception between Canadian and American systems, is that our system, healthcare, what is defined as healthcare is very different. Like, we are not covered for things like any dental, any eye care, any prescription medications whatsoever, any like physiotherapy, you know, all of those things. We actually have to rely quite heavily on work-related supplementary insurance. So if you're fortunate enough, like my husband's with the police department, he is covered and we are covered under his extended healthcare for some of those things. But in general, a lot of Canadians don't even have access to that sort of stuff. And they go bankrupt trying to pay for those things the same way as Americans struggle sometimes if they don't have insurance.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it hasn't made, I don't think it's increased availability. And you were saying earlier that you have a family doctor. And so why would you have a family doctor and maybe somebody else wouldn't? And why is that unique?
Because the government, what they do is they cap doctors' salaries, and they determine how much they're allowed to make each year. And so a doctor in their practice will say, okay, I can take on X number of patients. And when I've seen my limit, they're not allowed by law to see any more. So this is even more dangerous in our field of specialized medicine, which you can't even get into a specialist unless you have a family doctor. You need to go through the referral system like your primary care physician. And so a Canadian who doesn't have a family doctor may be facing, you know, an area that's overpopulated and there's just a shortage of doctors, and nobody is allowed to open another practice in that area until it's granted by the government. And so people really struggle in order to get in. We've had some doctors that will hold a lottery when a spot opens.
Oh, great.
And you can only imagine how a spot opens in a doctor's office.
Yeah, that's nice.
So, you know, it's a bittersweet a victory when you do get an opening. It's very sad, but they will run, you know, you will go in for an intake interview with a family doctor, and they will determine if you're too sick, then, you know, they don't want that type of drain on their practice. They'll only take so many seniors. They'll only take so many people with chronic issues.
So then you get referred to another specialist.
No, you're on your own.
Oh,
you are
really?
On your own. If you cannot get into a family doctor, you really are struggling. And then what happens is you end up relying heavily on the emergency room. Now, does that sound familiar?
Yeah. Can you say so Hunger Games?
How do they determine the cost for each citizen? I mean, is there a cost?
There is. The Fraser Institute, which is a conservative think tank group from Canada, finally did some statistics and worked on some numbers, and they've basically been able to narrow it down to a family of four. The average family of four pays approximately $15,000 a year in taxes that goes directly to their health insurance, government-run health insurance. So, I mean, $15,000, I think a lot of Canadians would be very, very shocked that that's what they pay, because we don't actually ever see any of that money going out. That just comes out from our taxes. And what do we get for that $15,000? Well, we get the privilege to wait 9 months or 18 months to see a specialist. 40,000 Canadians went over the border last year alone in order to get treatment. And that's a number that, you know, because it's become a dirty little secret. You know, you hide this from your neighbors when you're going over the border to get treatment because...
Wow.
I mean, the backlash on me when I spoke out is just horrendous from both sides of the border. It's terrible.
So you don't pay your doctors directly?
Absolutely not. We're not allowed to by law.
And they don't bill you. They get all their money comes direct from their claim to the government.
Which means you can't have a cash-only system. Like, my doctor doesn't take insurance.
Right.
So I pay him, and then if I can bill that to insurance, I mean, it might add a pittance to the deductible that I'll never be able to reach. But I can still go to him.
Right.
And what they're looking for here is the same thing they did to you guys. It's against the law then to just take cash for treatment.
Absolutely. Now, it isn't if I want to do that for my dog. If I would like to take my dog for an MRI, or if he needs a treatment, and you know, I can pay cash, and I can also buy private insurance for him, but I can't buy it for myself.
So you cannot, as a doctor, pass medical school, have your degree, be fully qualified in your field, and hang your shingle out and take cash and see patients.
No, you can't.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah, in fact, you could be thrown in jail for it, and so can the patient if you even try to bypass a wait time. And the other sad thing is that it's not even doled out properly throughout the whole country. I mean, it depends on where you live on what treatments the government deems, you know, appropriate. So depending on where you live in Canada, what your area code is whether or not you'll get treated for certain cancers.
Wow, so it doesn't matter who you are.
You live on the East Coast, and those things aren't covered, but you may live in Ontario, and they are.
Oh, wow. And so what would determine that?
Well, this is the thing. It's individual, you know, provincial governments that say we will carry, you know, we will cover this or we won't. And, you know, it's hit or miss where you live.
Kind of smacks
and it's not
of the,
like you can just freely go across the country in order to get treatment.
Kind of a little bit of a class system set up there. So if you can afford to live in the richer, wealthier areas, perhaps those local governments will cover certain health procedures.
Well, you would think that, but I think it goes more by the population. So certain cancers are maybe more prevalent in one area, and they won't cover them. You know, they're constantly looking for ways to cut costs.
And cull the herd.
And it just, we end up being on the suffering end of it.
So if you do live in an area that is, higher in cancer rates or whatever, magically the insurance isn't going to cover cancer.
Yes.
Oh, that's
and then
nice.
They say, you know, because you're not supposed to be able to, you know, it's supposed to be equal. It's supposed to be distributed equal across the board. But, you tell me that if you're, in a higher economic status than someone else, that you aren't going to know firsthand doctors, hospital CEOs that may look the other way and get you in quicker, bypass some, which, again, is very illegal. You're not allowed to do, but it definitely does happen in this country. So, and then the others, you know, and I've been accused quite often of saying, well, at least you had the money to do this. And quite frankly, I didn't have the money to do this. My husband works two jobs. You know, he works for our local police department. It's not something that we ever saved for, to say that this might even be an option that this would happen to us, because I have insurance. I I look at my insurance card and I look at my passport, and quite honestly, my passport has become a far more valuable document to me.
Wow. And do they? Is there a way for the Canadian government, I guess, to keep you from coming here, or does that just it just
no.
depends on whether or not you can afford it?
Whether or not you can afford it. No, they can't. And quite often, it wasn't in my case, but sometimes you can appeal to the government in order for them to pay for you to go to the United States. In fact, the Canadian government is probably one of the largest purchasers of private care in the United States for overflow, so that if you, you know, if they get really caught with their pants down and they need to, you know, they need to have somebody taken care of out of their emergency room and there's a shortage of beds or nursing staff, you know, all of those things, quite often you just talk to anybody at the border and, you know, ambulances are coming over the border with Canadian patients in them. We have a really high wait time for things like psychiatric care for youths, for drug situations and whatnot. A lot of those kids are sent over the border for treatment via the government. The area that I live in is very, very close to one of the top neonatal units in, for premature babies. And, you know, it doesn't come as any surprise that Preemie will be born and they'll be put in an ambulance and taken over the border to Buffalo, where they'll be taken care of. And quite often the parents can't go with them because they don't have passports.
Now, what if you have a procedure that you have taken care of in the United States and it requires a follow-up, say, in 6 months? Can that be done in Canada by your doctor, or they won't cover because it was
initial? I'd like to introduce you to Shona Holmes because I'm living proof
well,
that no, it doesn't.
Let's hit
because
that just a minute.
To me.
Well, we're going to hit that answer in just a second.
Sure.
We've got to take a quick break, but
absolutely.
That's a really good point we need to cover.
Exactly. All right, you're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online. There are people in the chat room, wethepeopleradio.us. And we'll be right back with you here at KCNR 1460 AM. Doctor. I knew we were going to have some good doctor stuff this hour. All right. We are back. Now, Shauna, how do you pronounce your name? Is it Shauna or Shona?
Shona.
See, it's spelled like Shona, so I wanted to say Shona.
No problem. No problem. I've been called a lot worse.
Well, I just thought, you know, hey, we've already been talking for a half hour. We should probably figure out how to say your name.
Yeah. Well, you Canadians have a funny way of talking.
That's
don't
right.
You know?
It's those that about our accent.
Our about, yeah, I've got a couple of those
she
already.
She could be speaking French, so lighten up, buddy.
That's
could
right.
Get, it could get a lot worse. I remember the first time we went up there, my dad's like, can't read any of the signs. What are they doing up here? It's like,
what the heck's a kilometer?
Lower in French Canada, Dad.
We must have been in Quebec.
Yeah, we were.
Right.
Well, we were little kids. We didn't know our dad was, you know, kind of a dunderhead at the time.
Yeah.
He was driving along in yellow shorts and black socks and sandals. You know, we thought he was cool.
Yes, yes.
God love him. So we titled the show Universal Healthcare Does Not End Suffering, It Redistributes It, because that's what you called your article.
Right.
And I think it's kind of important that people understand that. So Bill had a question on the...
Yeah, what happens if you go come over here, you get a major surgery or whatever, and it requires a follow-up in 6 months, and can you go to your local doctor now and say, hey, I had this done over there, and now I want you to kind of back clean up?
Well, you know, there's, you know, I personally have a family doctor that is just terrifically supportive and absolutely wonderful and will do anything she possibly can for me. What happens a lot of times, like after I had my surgery, I returned and I was unable to still get in I mean, I had had my surgery and needed my follow-up before I even had my original diagnostic testing done in Canada. So, many doctors will hold great resentment towards you for leaving the country and doing what you had to do. And so, a lot of people as well, like if they're on, say, for instance, workman's compensation, or if whatever their condition is affecting their unemployment at work, it's null and void if you leave the country and get treatment. So, you know, you're basically told to sit and wait and suffer, and then they'll deal with you. And
or they
so
break up with you. Oh, that's great.
They do. They do. They break up with you. And, I mean, that is the absolute worst fear, is that somebody lets, you know, the doctor lets you go. And what a horrible way to treat people at the worst time in their lives, you know. Like, I know there was some controversy in Canada because a lot of people were traveling to other parts of the world to get treatment for MS. There's a very unique treatment for MS, and it's not recognized in Canada yet. And people were showing up in emergency rooms when they came back for follow-up care, and they were basically being told that they can't be treated because what they had didn't exist, you know, what they had, you know, because the government didn't recognize it. So it's a very tragic situation, and, you know, it's just so important that Americans keep this dialogue going for the next couple of election cycles, because, you know, whoever gets in the next couple of elections, it's going to be very important that they keep their word and do something about this.
Well, I think a lot of the sentiment is, well, we already have it. We're just going to have to tweak it a little bit and make it work. Well, I disagree. I think
ours
you can
will go
dump
bro-
it and go back.
Yeah, ours will go broke before.
It's going to be a mess either way, but.
Yeah. Anything I mean, who else? Can unscramble an egg? And, of course, Canada, 45 years later, they look around and they say, you know, and Canadians, like I said, we sit there and we say, how could we dare afford? Because we hear about these horrendous, you know, policies and the amount that people have to pay for health insurance, all arguing and debating out of ignorance, that we pay the exact same amount. And yet we're not getting the treatment or the service. We are not a customer in Canada. And after having my experience in the United States, I realized how important it is that we remain customers in the healthcare business. It's really important.
Sure, because otherwise you don't drive the quality of the care.
Right.
You don't drive the variety of the care. And there's no incentive to do research.
None whatsoever. That cut.
That's actually kind of a
more
problem.
More than 50% the day the government took over.
Oh, wow.
And we got government-run healthcare, any type of research, it just goes out the window. They just don't do it.
Well, you say, you know, how do you unscramble an egg? I think it's pretty simple. You just open it back up to the free market
right. And
let it sort itself out. And I guarantee you, you'll have doctors coming out of the woodwork.
So you just go get a new egg.
Yeah.
Opening up their private practice, taking cash, accepting insurance. I mean, it would go back pretty quickly. I mean, within, you know, a couple of years, we would be back on track, I'm sure. And look, it's taken how many years to get this thing in place? And it's so messed up right now.
Well, they did it like a train wreck at the last
minute.
And
it's not even what we voted on.
Well, you've got a point in here in your article. You said, so what if you are 36th on the list for a procedure that's budgeted for only 12 times a year in a hospital?
Right. Well, I knew of a lady that had a procedure that she needed done with, it was kind of like a pacemaker for a bladder. And very, you know, from what I thought, it was a very, you know, unique situation.
Yeah, don't set it for a night.
She had called to find out from the manufacturer what doctors in the United States did it. And they said, well, you have to give us an idea which state you're looking at. She goes, I don't care any state. And they said, well, you'd have to break it down because there's hundreds and hundreds of doctors qualified, whereas in Canada, there was only one or two. And so this blew her away right away. And then what she then would find out later is that because there was only one or two of doctors that did this, that the hospital only budgeted for 12 of these procedures to be done a year. And she was number 36 on the list. So by the time her name came up, it was 3.5 years later. Now, she did not have the means. She could not get it together in order to go to the United States and have the treatment done. And she opted against doing it. And by the time her name came up, her bladder was shot, and she lost out on the opportunity to do it. So, unfortunately, we all learn our lessons in different ways. And, you know, it is a very daunting task to take on the government, to take on your doctors, to say that you need different treatment and what can you do about it. But so, that's exactly what happens. There was a hospital out in our West Coast that basically ran out of money by, you know, September, and they immediately stopped all quote unquote elective surgeries for the rest of the year. Now, Michael Moore made a great deal of money talking about Canada and their surgeries, but an elective surgery is any surgery that you are given a date for. So if you get rushed into emergency and you've had a heart attack and they say, listen, we need to do a quadruple bypass, we will see you, you know, in 3 weeks and we're going to try and get you in then that becomes elective surgery.
Wow.
Unless they actually wheel you in right to the operating room and do surgery immediately, then that's emergency. Anything other than that is elective.
Yeah, it almost sounds like the doctors are the ones that determine whether or not you're going to be treated, not necessarily the laws.
Well, no, because what happens is the doctors, you know, they're overwhelmed. You know, if you're upset with the wait times, well, there's 90 people in their waiting room that will take your spot. So sit down, be quiet, and go with the flow is what you get from them. Now, the doctors are kind of 50-50 on whether or not they support me speaking out and what I'm doing. Some like working for the government. Others are fully aware that they can do things differently. Our brain drain to the United States is quite high, and we have quite a few doctors that just go to the States because they cannot practice here in Canada. And this is what I think you're hearing as well, is that there are many, many doctors that are saying, do not go into the medical field.
Yes.
You know, they're going to practice other things. And it's not an idle threat. They will do it.
Yeah, they're telling their kids or, you know, I mean, why would you come out with a couple $100,000 in debt and then you're going to go to work for the government?
Yes.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Just doesn't pay that.
And, you know, Americans talk a lot about tort reform because that is something that is a tremendous, you know, burden on doctors and their practices is the ability for the general public to sue to such extent. Now, in Canada, we have the total opposite. And that doesn't work either. So when you get, you know, really messed around or something happens, there is no ability to sue. So, you know, you've really got to find a happy medium somewhere.
So you can't sue?
No. Well, if you mitigate your damages in any shape or form, then, you know, there's absolutely, I mean, it's near impossible. It is near impossible. And I have been in a lawsuit with the government just to get reimbursed for my medical bills. And, I mean, I'm at the end of the road there. It's just never going to happen.
Do the doctors
need
to carry?
That's why I took on the constitutional challenge because I thought this is just not right. I mean, at least I have the ability to negotiate and, you know, speak for myself and make phone calls and all those sorts of things. But what about, you know, the poor 80-year-old that's sitting in their house with no family or anybody to speak on their behalf?
Do the doctors have to carry malpractice insurance?
They do. They do. But basically what that's done is that the Canadian Medical Association is backed by the government. So when you're suing your doctor, you're suing yourself. It's just suing the taxpayers.
Yeah.
You know, and they have unlimited funds and they have unlimited lawyers that will, you know, because they are not paid to lose. They're
right.
Just not paid to lose.
Suing the police.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, that's brutal.
We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Go ahead, you're in this fire.
KCNR 1460.
Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
We'll be back.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes. So long.
I called my doctor on the telephone. Help me, doctor, something's wrong. I can't shake it, it's gone too far. He said, tell me what your symptoms are.
probably not love with your insurance program if you live anywhere, actually, in North America. But I guess now, Shauna, are we all going to go to Mexico?
Well, we just might, you know. I've done some traveling down there and the hospitals, you know. There's a lot of American doctors down there as well.
Well, exactly. We've been doing that for years, though. I mean, you know, people here have gone to Mexico forever for dental and for their prescription drugs. And I guess,
medical tourism is around worldwide.
Medical
and the
tourism.
Point is, and I guess this is why I'm so passionate about this, because I really have zero skin in the game. I've been involved in the last two elections and, you know, just speaking out in order that Americans can at least hear this side of the story under the noise. And the fact, like I said, that I have no skin in the game. I'm just a grateful neighbor who, you know, you were there for me when I needed help. I had somewhere that I could go that I felt confident and I knew that I would be taken care of properly. But where will Americans go when this happens? I mean, they really don't have, you know, they don't have the luxury of being able to go places the way we can and rely on America. And the world is watching America to get this right. Because I don't believe there's another nation that has actually the perfect system. And I think if there's any country that can do it, America can.
Well, the European countries that have nationalized medicine are trying to figure out how to get away from it because it's breaking.
That's right. And they have, like in Great Britain, they have a thing called BUPA where you can go, you do have the option to have private health insurance. But you have to go through the National Health Service first. And if they find that the wait times, you know, are going to be too long, then you can then rely on your private health insurance.
Yeah, and again, you're depending on a bureaucrat to determine what's too long. You know, that's
well, and in this country, we've seen. Have you just kind of been chuckling up your sleeve, not because of the outcome, but just because of the issue? Watching our Veterans Administration healthcare
in my heart.
You're like, and, I told them.
Like, basically what's happened is you've gotten an absolute window into the Canadian system.
Yep.
You know, this is exactly what happens. And people cover it up, and they bring out false wait times and all of these things that Americans just have never heard of before. And of all people to do it to is your veterans.
Yeah. And you guys, and are those, how do I want to ask this? I guess, does that mimic at all the types of things you're seeing up in your system?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely, this is what happens. But it's very difficult to get that kind of information out, and we're just not privy to it until somebody gets brave enough to go public. And, you know, many people phone me because they don't know where to start, and they say, Shauna, how do I even get treatment in the United States? What's my first step? And they'll say to me, do I go to the newspapers? Do I go public? And, you know, it's a really, really hard thing for me to say to people because it really does change your life. I mean, we had to put security on our house. I got death threats when I spoke out against the healthcare system. And people are very, very, very funny about it. And they're protective, wanting to hold on to something. You know, our unions are very invested in keeping the government programs as they are. And, you know, it's very, very sad. So, yes, it is definitely the sort of thing that we're dealing with. And people are dying.
Well, how does it work if, let's say, you're unemployed? We have a lot of folks that are in fact, the majority, I think, of people that are on this are not employed, are getting it for nothing. Is that how it works in Canada? If you're not employed, you just don't pay?
You just don't pay, but you still get the same treatment. Yes. Now, again, people are very tied to their employment if they want coverage for things like any kind of drugs, prescription drugs, of course, any type of dental work, eyeglasses. And not everybody has the privileges of some that they're covered for those sorts of things, like a supplementary insurance, you know. So we are still tied to our employer for those sorts of things. There are many people who can't afford their medications. You know, if you have to rely on government help, you know, for our seniors and that sort of things, there are different programs that they can go in. But a classic example is that the government If they are supporting, say, somebody who is a diabetic, their recommendation is to check your blood sugar once a day. Now, anybody who is a diabetic knows that that's absolutely absurd. I have a 4-year-old granddaughter who is a type 1 diabetic, and we check her sugars, on numerous times a day, only to keep her at optimum health. But when the government is invested in it in any shape or form, then they hold back services. And we even have, some of our top politicians that come to the United States for treatment. You know, one of our premiers of one of our provinces, which is equivalent to your governor, traveled to Florida to get heart surgery. We had another politician, and she went to California to have breast cancer treatment. Now, her breast cancer treatment would have been available in Canada. She would have had to wait longer. She is a very wealthy person. But the main reason that a lot of people will travel to the States is just simple things. If you lose a breast to breast cancer in Canada, they will not maintain your nipple because they cannot, that's just a cost they're not willing to do. And so you get a tattoo or something along that line. Yeah, in order to reconstruct your breast, whereas in the United States, they will fight very hard to maintain the nipple. So it's definitely cost-cutting. There is no question about it.
It's kind of like, you got your eye poked out, so we'll just sew that thing shut and get a little tattoo, and it'll look just like an eye. Why waste why waste the effort of putting in a new one?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's alarming.
Yes.
And creepy. All at the same time. And then also in your article, we touched on it, but we didn't actually give people the whole list. In your article, you say some things that many Americans don't understand about our health insurance program is that things it does not cover. It no longer covers dental care, vision, prescription drugs, physiotherapy, and preventative care.
Right.
Okay, go down the road on preventative care. What's up with that?
Well, this is the whole thing, because I've been sitting back watching all, your president saying that this is what's going to make a difference for Americans. Is it going to keep them well and out of hospitals? But, you may be entitled to a mammogram, but it may take you 2 years to get in to get one. Again, like I said, I talk about the diabetes situation, if you can't get into a specialist, then what is the point of any of these preventative type cares? It just doesn't work, And then they start to cut costs on what they can do. They'll say, a colonoscopy, you have to be over a certain age, and, you may qualify for one every 5 years, yet your doctor thinks you need one every year, and those sorts of things. And you can't, any service that the government offers, you cannot pay for privately on your own. So, for instance, mammograms and colonoscopies and MRIs and all of those things are provided by the government. So your only option is to get in line and wait for them to give it to you.
Oh, wow. Well, that's fairly frightening. So the ability for you, can you hang with us for just a little bit?
Absolutely.
After the top of the hour? Because I know we're going to run out of time here. What is it? We've got like a minute and a half. Because I'm thinking, how do you get back to a system that makes sense, that's responsive to people, and what's the appetite up there? I mean, are people thinking, probably time to start fighting to go the other way?
Well, this is where I've started my constitutional challenge, which is definitely going to be difficult. But we are going to see changes in Canada because we're imploding. Our system is completely collapsing in on itself. So, we have no choice. But what now we have to do is try and woo insurance companies and corporations to come in and take a chance on Canada again. And I don't know whether or not they will.
Yeah, because you guys kind of already shot them in the head once.
Yeah.
So, you know. Once bitten, twice shy. I realize
that's
I
right.
mixed my metaphors, but you get what I mean.
Yeah.
Interesting. And the cost. I'm kind of curious on cost. So maybe we can hit both of those when we come back. We've got about 45 seconds here, which is always brutal because you always have one more idea. All right. We're here with Shona. Let me go back to my page here. Universal health care does not end suffering. It redistributes it. Oh, surprise! We'll be back with Shona Holmes from Canada, so she can give us a fast forward into what we have to look forward to. You're listening to We the People Radio here at wethepeopleradio.us on KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, we already did that one.
Welcome
back. You're rejoining We the People Radio. You can jump in on the chat room anytime you'd like. WeThePeopleRadio.us. We are on with Shona Holmes from Canada. Beautiful downtown Canada. And she's up there by Niagara Falls. I love Niagara Falls.
Talking about Obamacare.
Hey, you know what we were talking about during the break? All right, all joking aside.
Here we go.
She reminded me of something that we all forgot. Huh?
Tell me.
Okay, the company that wrote the website. Okay, so we have all this website.
Oh, that's right.
You were Canadians.
That's right. They gave us all the good stuff.
They already messed up stuff in Canada, and then we hired them. Okay, how big of idiots did you guys think we were?
Well, it blew my mind away. It really did. Because first of all, I questioned, why are they using a Canadian company? And I'm thinking, well, maybe because they want the same kind of billing system. And then, like I said, we spent millions on it, millions trying to get electronic health records, and all of it was thrown out and to be started again, and all at taxpayers' expense. And then here, you use the exact same company. So, I know. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Now, you are getting some very talented doctors from Canada, so I have to say at least you've got some people that are coming down there to help out, but it definitely is a mess. And, you know, when you look at costs, one thing my husband and I found very, very interesting when we did look at costs, because, like, again, I need to reiterate that we did not have the finances to do this. My husband jokingly refers to me as a second mortgage, and he has two jobs in order to pay our medical bills, and hopefully someday we will see the end of those. But I'm here, and I'm very, very fortunate that I am still here. But we looked at our bill, and if you are an uninsured Canadian, one of our local hospitals, and you need a hospital bed, it is $1,400 a day, and that is for a ward. So there's four of you in a room. Now, my private room in a hospital, which was my only option, there was only private rooms, was $900 a day when I was in the United States. So, you know, when they say it's just so much cheaper, it's not. It's just all the costs are hidden.
Hmm. That's and that part has yet to drop.
Well, they've done such a great job of negotiating the cheaper rates. See, when the government gets involved, it's always cheaper, right?
That's right. And you know, the CEO salaries just climb higher and higher. And you know, the number four cause of death in Canada is hospital acquired infections. And why is that? Because the very first thing they do is they cut cleaning staff. And they run programs to educate their nurses to wash their hands. You know, one hospital spent over $200,000 just on a campaign to teach their nurses to wash their hands.
Oh, that was
Nursing 101.
Yeah, what? That was the first thing Aaron's doctor told her. She had a kind of a minor procedure here a couple years ago, and he said his first concern was to get her out of the hospital as quickly as possible.
Yes.
Well, that's just
not a safe
place
to
be. That's just because I was goofing off, though.
Well, no.
I was goofing around just a little bit because they had me on all sorts of pain medication, and that never goes well.
Yeah.
No, but the hospital, you walk in there, don't touch anything.
That's right. That's right. And like you said, you know, we used to have enough cleaning staff that would clean the whole hospital, and now, you know, those staff are maybe, they may have been, you know, responsible for two floors of cleaning on a shift, and now they're responsible for six floors. And it's just not done right. It just is not done right.
So your constitutional challenge, your ability to go to roll this back, is it much of a movement or is it kind of like you?
It's difficult. It is difficult
sort of
because, like I said, the noise, the media drains it out because an awful lot of our media is you know, liberal-based, and it is drained out. I mean, we've even had one of our top comedians here do a spoof on me, and, you know, they do everything that they possibly can to you know, take my story down, that it's just, you know, that I'm in a minority of what's happening. And, you know, so it is very, very difficult. And unfortunately, once, you know, it's not until you're at your sickest or you're most desperate that you realize how bad the system is. And how do you get sick people to stand up and fight for themselves when they should be taking care of themselves and their families?
What about the mortality rate? Or is anybody, that's of course all calculated by a
bureaucrat. Well, you know, we get good numbers through the World Health Organization, you know, but you got to look at those kind of statistics because we get extra credit because we have, you know, socialized medicine. But no, there are certain, you can take certain things like, you know, cancer survival rates are definitely better in the United States than they are in Canada. You know, apparently we live longer, and I don't know if it's because we're on the wait list and we don't know we're dying yet. I don't know if that's the reason.
You've become more mentally
you know, we
resilient.
Haven't been told how sick we are yet. So I do not get that one. I'm not 100% sure. And I think my husband would probably argue at this point that the reason why our mortality rates, especially for living longer, is, you know, crime rates and those sorts of things, like how people are dying and that sort of thing. We're just a smaller population.
Sure. And is there any, do you have a difference? Is there a difference of opinion in all this or the interest in fighting it from the western side of Canada to the eastern side of Canada? Is
Absolutely,
one side more
yeah.
liberal than another?
Yeah, absolutely. Alberta is, you know, and actually the constitutional challenge, I'm not the first challenger. The first challenger was actually in Quebec, and it was a doctor who filed the challenge, and he won. And so that's why these cases have to be challenged in each province in order to change the law completely in Canada. But yeah, places like Alberta that are tend to be prone more to, you know, that way of thinking, you know, it's definitely, it's more supportive than it is in this area. But Ontarians are definitely, they're definitely changing. And, you know, my husband always jokes that I could probably go along and say, never say another thing about this again and still be right that it will change. Because it just has to. We are imploding on ourselves. Our system is just absolutely collapsing. And the only two ways that they can fix that is either take more taxpayer money and pour it into it and then redistribute it as they see fit, or they slowly take away services that they offer. And, you know, those really are their only, the government's two options. And I think that the most logical option is let's try and convince corporations and insurance companies to come back into Canada and help us rebuild a system that is sustainable and that is available to everybody, regardless of, you know, I think it's one thing to be told that you can't get in for something because you can't, you know, that you don't have the finances or whatnot. That's a decision you have to make yourself, to what extent you're willing to go for your health. But to be told you're not allowed something because the government won't let you have it, I mean, that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, because it's at that point, it's arbitrary.
It's arbitrary, right. And the thing is that Americans, what I've found, because people have said to me, well, what do people do? And, you know, they rely on churches and they rely on hospitals, and charity from hospitals is just magnificent. You don't see that in Canada. You don't have people coming from around the world to get their treatment because they're not allowed to put people ahead of Canadians that are on wait times. Yet our immigration, they bring people in and you know, they're only here 3 months and boom, they're on the same wait list that somebody who's been here their whole life, you know. So there is a lot of inconsistencies for people that they're starting to say, hey, this really isn't working.
Interesting. Well, and I'm sure they don't cut you a break on cost. I mean, as far as taxes go, maybe we should have had like Canadian 101, because, you know, John Candy's movie Canadian Bacon probably wasn't true.
No,
you know.
No, we're very high taxed as a nation.
Okay.
It is very expensive place to live. And, you know, so when you look at it like that, you just sort of, a lot of people, that's why they don't have the vision of being able to get out and take care of themselves. And, you know, they look at the different costs and whatnot, and, you know, they'll brag that, you know, the amount that we spend per year on healthcare is lower than that in the States. Well, it is, because it's predetermined. the government decides we're going to spend this amount, and by law we're not allowed to go over it. So, you know, that's why we're able to keep our GDP for healthcare to what we say it's going to be.
Yeah, you've done such a great job, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Budget-minded.
That's right. That's right. And that's what it boils down to. And yet Canadians will argue that, you know, our system is far better because it doesn't matter how much money you have or where you are in an economic scale. But yeah, it does, because the wealthy will always get taken care of and the poor will always get taken care of. And where the people that it's really hitting is the middle class. You know, my husband works with a gentleman who, you know, like people have said, well, if you're that sick or if it's just something minor, you know, but my husband works with a gentleman who had a bunion. Now, that is not life-threatening. It is a very painful thing for somebody to have to experience, but he was 3 years waiting to get in to see an orthopedic surgeon because the government stepped up and said, we need to see elderly for hips and knees. So they had to put all their resources into giving people new hips and new knees. So here this gentleman, 3 years, with working in agony, he couldn't walk a beat, he couldn't, you know, he was eventually got addicted to pain medication. You know, it affected his marriage, it affected his job. So what would a reasonable Canadian do, you know, whereas he could just have driven over the border, had it repaired, and he would have been back on the job. So it is costing people, it is costing corporations and businesses and whatnot to have your patients suffering.
Yeah. What, just for kicks, what is the unemployment rate in Canada?
Do you know what? I don't actually know what it is right now. But it's a little bit better than yours is. And it's not been a huge issue for us at this point.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
We weren't affected as badly with the recession. And I think that's mainly because the way our banks are run versus, you know, where American banks were run and that sort of thing.
Well, the reason I ask is I'm just curious how many people are paying into this system versus how many people are actually taking advantage of it.
Yeah, well, I think it's very, very similar to your situation. There are always going to be the people that are going to pay in more and people that are never going to pay in.
Right. But it's interesting that you have a set rate of pay, you know, $1,500 or whatever it is, for everybody. I mean, I don't see that happening here, but maybe that's what they're going to go to.
For what they pay towards their insurance?
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's $15,000.
Or $15,000, yeah.
Yeah, $15,000 a year, and that's roughly basically based on, and it's strictly based on their taxes, right? So a certain portion of their taxes go to health care.
So that's the maximum?
That I actually haven't read. I've bookmarked it to read, but about it being that we are now spending more on health care than we are on anything else. Like, it's now going over what we're spending on our housing and food and all of those sorts of things that are coming out of our money.
Right.
But again, because Canadians don't actually see it, they don't value themselves as actually paying for it.
So you have a sliding scale. $15,000 is the top, and then
$15,000 would be basically the average family of four in a $100,000 bracket price or income bracket.
Uh-huh.
So obviously, if some gentleman is making, you know, $400,000 on his own, he's going to be paying more for his insurance.
Oh, I got you. All right, yeah, so it's similar to what we do then.
Right.
It's based on your income.
Wow.
And we're also paying, here, I've just gotten here too, it's 7% employment rate is where we're at right now. And we're paying over $5 a gallon for gas, and we have been for a couple of years. I will buy, treat my husband to a case of beer over in the States, and it's Canadian beer, and I can pay $17 for a 24 case of beer for Canadian beer in the States, and yet I can come over in Canada, and that exact same case of beer will cost me $45.
Wow.
And that is taxes. And those taxes will go to running hospitals. And we still have to do charities and whatnot just to buy beds and equipment and MRI machines.
Mm.
That sucks.
That's great. Yeah.
Well, this is like, what is it?
You can't even drink and forget your problems.
You can't afford to drive to the store.
That's right.
I feel like we're on, a Christmas story. You know, this is like the ghost of Christmas future.
I know. That's all I heard about your earthquake this morning, and I'm thinking, oh, and here's Shona to come along and cheer everybody up.
Yeah, you know, another episode of Scare the Crap Out of Your Radio.
That's right.
Well, Shona, we thank you for coming on, and I'm sure we'll have you back. Keep fighting your fight, and, you know, you've got our information. So as things develop, don't be afraid to reach out to us, too.
I certainly will.
We always want to know what's going on elsewhere, because it's coming here next, obviously.
Terrific.
We'll do what we can to see if we can roll our health care back so you can actually come and use it.
Right. And I just want to thank everybody in the United States for allowing us to still come over the border and get treatment. So it is a very important thing to us as Canadians.
Well, we can all carpool when we all get to go to Mexico.
That's right.
We're halfway there.
That's right.
Thanks a million.
Okay, terrific.
And stay healthy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Everybody stay healthy. Eat your vegetables out there. We're going to come back in 2 minutes. We're going to thank our advertisers, and we'll be back with Liz Bowen. We're going to get an update on the State of Jefferson Declaration that's being taken down to Sacramento this week from Siskiyou and Modoc counties. You're here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies, twisted my give a damn's for sure. Well, maple syrup and snow is what they export. They treat curling just like it's a real sport. They think their silly accent is so cute. Can't understand a thing they're talking about.
Sure, they got sorry, Shona.
She permits from rhymes and clean air. And again, well, they got Celine Dion. Eat their weight in fried macaroni and cream of fried bananas and bony all over Saskatchewan.
Throw in one more shot there.
Nothing like Weird Al on a Sunday morning. Well, that wraps up our Canadian segment. And from there, we veer swiftly into the State of Jefferson. Actually, after that, people like just veer into anything. Anything. So we have Liz Bowen on the horn with us.
Howdy, Aaron.
Hey, there you are. So yep. From beautiful downtown Smoky Callahan.
Yeah, actually, we've got some blue skies today after having several days where the smoke was just so thick you couldn't even see a mile. It's been really nice. We've had two mornings of blue sky, and the wind's blowing the other way, which is good for us, but not good for the people on the other side of the fires.
Yeah, nobody wins in that deal. So while Siskiyou County is burning up, we thought we'd better give people an update on the Jefferson Declaration. Should we call it a trek? What is it when you go to Sacramento? I guess it's a trek. Pilgrimage?
It's a five-hour drive for us, that's for sure.
It's a trek. So you guys are going down on the... What day of the week is it this week? Friday? Thursday?
It's this Thursday.
Thursday.
August 28th. And we're going to meet at 2 p.m. at the South Steps. No, not south. I've got it wrong already. West.
The West Steps.
Yeah. I got the date
capital.
Wrong. You got the place wrong. So between us, nobody will be anywhere at the right day or time.
Okay. Well, it's the West. I'll repeat
West
it.
West Steps.
West Steps. And we've got several carloads of folks coming down from Siskiyou. The Scott Valley Protect Our Water was the first group that jumped in and supported Mark Baird when he came up with this idea. He was president, and I was one of the vice presidents, and I said, yeah, that's a great idea. And at our next Protect Our Water meeting, because we've been fighting all these over-regulations from the state that are just hammering us in a variety of economies. Anyway, and so we took a vote at our next meeting, and out of 50 people, 48 voted for Mark's resolution, and we made an agenda item for a discussion with the Board of Supervisors in August, and over 100 people showed up, and it was just a discussion item at that point, and one of the supervisors suggested it become a declaration so we could submit it to the state legislature, and off we were running.
Nice. So you're only of there are six counties that have signed the declaration, but you're only taking Modoc and Siskiyou this week, correct?
Correct. We need to get it started. And Modoc and Siskiyou, we did it, their Board of Supervisors approved it last September, so it's past time to get them submitted. And the other four will be submitted within the next several months.
Nice. Outstanding. And now when you go to Sacramento, you're going to march it in there. Where do you take it?
We take it to the Parliamentarian of the Assembly, the Parliamentarian of the Senate, and to Secretary of State Deborah Bowen.
Interesting. And what time are you congregating on the West Steps to do that?
2 p.m.
2 p.m., okay.
And of all things, us rebels actually did obtain a permit, so we can actually have a little PA system there, and we can actually do some speaking and handing out of flyers. So,
nice.
We do conform, even though people think we're just rebels.
You took out a permit. We'll put that on your report card.
What? You that get, we conformed?
You get a plus for citizenship. You got the permit. So
okay.
you guys walk it in, and you give it to the parliamentarian, and then what does that do? What happens at that point?
All right. We are including it's a declaration and petition. What that does is that then gives these two counties standing for a possible federal lawsuit if they don't pay attention to us.
So if you take the paperwork in and then you just never hear back from them?
Correct. That's happened before, hasn't it?
Yeah, that could happen.
Yeah, they're pretty good at that.
They're busy passing gun bills, you know. You can't...
Bathroom bills.
Yeah, they're busy passing gun bills. Oh, we can't get away fast enough, that's for sure.
No kidding.
And that's what really this will do. It will give us standing... we have the actual certified declarations and petitions that both Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors and the Modoc Supervisors did approve. And then we have this legislative type of information document that will go with them. And actually, it is a petition. This one is a petition to the California Secretary of State under Article 1, Section 3A of the California Constitution to increase representation in the California legislature. And that's what this is all about, is getting more representation.
Nice.
I wanted to mention one other thing.
Yes.
I brought it up. And in 1992, when Stan Statham... He was our assemblyman, and he's the one who gave us this idea. He came up to the a group in Yreka and was talking about in 1992 when he was assemblyman, and he submitted, actually wrote legislation to divide California into, originally it was three states. I think it ended up in two states. And it actually passed the assembly. The Senate, the Speaker of the Senate would not even entertain it. But there was an advisory vote with 31 counties. It was a June primary election, June 2nd, 1992. And 31 Northern California counties, including San Francisco, were allowed to vote. And 28 approved it.
Wow.
The ones that did not was San Francisco, San Mateo, and Solano. Modoc and Siskiyou approved it with the largest percentage. Modoc's was 82% of the people approved it, and Siskiyou was 80% of the people approved it.
And then it got shut down in the Senate? Or never got brought up, right?
Yeah, and so we've kind of planned for that possibility with submitting this as a declaration and a petition. So so that it will give us standing to do a lawsuit.
So will they still be able to basically not hear it if you submit these?
That's true.
Okay.
That is true. We are not introducing the legislation to actually do the split. This is just legal type of language to help give us some standing. Not some standing, to help give us standing for any future shenanigans that the state legislature may try to do.
Gotcha.
Wow, that's kind of great, though. So it's kind of on the way, and then the...
Well, it's a little different tack than they did before, so...
Yeah, well...
It can't get ignored this time.
That's kind of
right.
Kind of great. And then how many counties do you need, just out of curiosity? I mean, do you have to have a certain number before this is a viable option, and then how do you decide where the line goes?
Yeah, we don't decide. The counties decide where the line will be. We would like to have 9 or 10 counties. We actually have up to 19 counties that right now that have people that are interested, and we have an active 16 counties.
16 counties have said that they would. How many counties have agreed to the split?
Six.
Okay.
They've already signed the declaration of intent to withdraw.
Yeah. And that was.
I wasn't going to make you rattle them off because I couldn't do it either.
I've got them right here. The most fun one was Glenn County on January 21st of 2014 when all five of their supervisors voted for it. They had absolutely no argument. And they weren't scared. Their supervisors are angry at the state of California for lack of representation and over-regulation and just treating the rural counties like, you know, we don't matter. Yuba, then, their board of supervisors approved it April 15th, which was a good day. And then Tehama County, that went to the registered voters, and they voted in the primary election June 3rd. 56% approved it. And so on July 15th, the Tehama County supervisors did approve the declaration with a 5-0 vote as well. And then Sutter County Board of Supervisors approved it on July 22nd of this year. So actually, when I look back, I didn't know what we were getting into when we started down this road just a year ago.
Of course not.
But actually, in 10 months, we've gotten 6 counties. That's actually pretty impressive.
That's pretty fast.
That is really fast. And so when did the other guys take theirs in, and then how do you decide when that is?
Actually, when we get things organized, I guess. We have to make sure we have the correct documentation with their county board of supervisors' names on it, and that just really hasn't been decided. We've been such a grassroots group here that we do have a central committee, but we're not overly controlling in that our biggest goal is just to aid the counties and the committees in the counties to get their declarations approved. So that's where the big focus has been.
Now, I know you guys have spent tons of time traveling around getting this information out to the different counties.
Mark Baird and some of the Shasta County committee people have just been fantastic. They've went to many town hall meetings and county board of supervisor meetings, and they're really to be commended for the amount of efforts that they've put in.
Yeah, because he's down in Gray Eagle. I spoke with them a little after 9, and they're down in Gray Eagle today doing a town hall.
Yep, that's at 3:00.
Yep, so that's kind of awesome.
And that, yeah. What county is that?
Mark's been great, and the one thing people forget is that it's a long old drive for him.
Yeah, that's, what is that, Placer or
Nevada?
Or Nevada County?
That's Gray Eagle is in Nevada?
Yeah, okay.
Nevada County, okay.
Gray Eagle's in Plumas County.
Oh,
I was thinking it was in Plumas.
We didn't pick the right one.
We got 16 to choose from. So.
I've been there, but I guess I didn't care what county it was in when I was there. It's really pretty there, though.
Yeah, Plumas has had a couple of smaller meetings, and then this is a bigger one. And
nice.
So we're excited for them, and we'll see where it goes. It, a lot of it is really just letting the Board of Supervisors know it. That it's just really, it's not as scary as it seems. Actually, the declaration itself doesn't really have any bite. That's why we have added the petition to it from Siskiyou and MODOC. But it's more than anything, it is to let the state of California know that we are here, we're alive, we have a voice, we want our voice to be heard, and that's really the main thrust of it.
Yeah, I think most folks, like anything else, are just afraid of change. They have a lot of questions on, you know, what if this does happen? Who's going to pay for this and that and the other thing? And that's what you guys have done such a great job of doing, is getting that information out to them, letting them know that, you know, it's not a big scary thing. That
well, you take some ribbing. I mean, you know, you got the media that hasn't been. It's funny though; they've been a little schizophrenic about it. Sometimes they think it's a great idea, and then other times everybody's a nut job.
That's true. We never know quite what we're going to get from the media. We have several people, Red Smith and Kayla Brown in Shasta County, have worked, and some others down in Placer have put together really good information regarding economics. And the practical aspect of it is, if we can just get back to a basic form of government, we believe there needs to be some regulations, but just not so many regulations that they regulate you out of business. We believe we need to be able to manage our forests. This antiquated, old-fashioned attitude that you have to save every tree is making them all burn up.
Yeah.
Not all, a significant amount of them burn up. And, we, you know, as far as the carbon tax goes, we've got so much carbon going in the air from the burning trees that forget about having to worry about trucks.
Yeah, trucks are a small part of it at this point. And if you need, if folks want more information on what this movement is all about, you can go to their website at stateofjefferson51.com. That has probably the most comprehensive information on the movement, and there's contact information, everything you want to know. So stateofjefferson51.com is where you want to go.
And Robert has all the websites, because there are a bunch of them, and radio and different things happening so people can get educated. This was not designed to be the comprehensive educational segment with poor Liz in 15 minutes. Hey, by the way, tell everybody everything in 15 minutes.
Okay.
Can you give them a little bit, though, on the why there are two X's? Because you have a lot of people who say, well, I don't really like the logo. What's with the X's?
All that means is that we've been double-crossed by the government. Simple. And we've got six counties, six Board of Supervisors that agree with it, because they feel they've been double-crossed by the state of California. And so that's just a real simple one.
That logo came from the movement back in the 40s when State of Jefferson was first formed. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, there's been a lot of movements that have tried to split from California. That was the most visible one, and that included several counties in Oregon. And the double X there actually meant that both Salem, the capital of Oregon, and Sacramento, the capital of California, had double-crossed the people at the very top of California in the southern part of Oregon. And so that's what that double-cross, double X, really meant.
Well, we think it's fun and spicy.
It still fits.
Yes, it does.
Okay, give them the rundown for Thursday.
Okay, West Capitol Steps at the State Capitol in Sacramento, 2 p.m., August 28th, this Thursday. Come and help us make history.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. And so we'll be looking forward to getting a full report, obviously, and there will be, I'm sure, lots of pictures and all that stuff. That site that I think I think Robert put it up. I don't know. Did you put it up, stateofjefferson51.com?
No, Robert put that one up. The one that I've been doing for a year is jeffersondeclaration.net.
Okay, I knew it was a .net one. And so
we have two. They've just come up with that one. It's a great one because it has so many YouTube videos, goes right into them, has the Facebook pages. You can get to all the county committees. They all have a Facebook page, and mine started out, we just needed a way to communicate with each other, and so I knew WordPress, so I put a blog together. So that's what ours is. We have several counties that have really good informative websites that you can get to through jeffersondeclaration.net.
Outstanding. Well, thanks a million, Liz. We promised we'd let you go by quarter till so you could make it to teach Sunday school, and this time we're not going to lie.
All righty. Well, thank you very much. And the one thing I wanted to throw out, I think one of the best things we did on this one is that when we were first deciding what to do, we had some people wanted to put it to a committee. And I got a little stubborn and ornery, and I said, nope, I was tired of committees rehashing things and not getting anything done. So
yeah,
we didn't do it a committee. I said, Mark's resolution he came up with initially was sufficient, and we voted on it and approved it, and off we went. So sometimes a committee is a good idea, and other times it's just going to slow you down.
I remember that meeting.
Yeah, you were there.
Exactly. Well, thanks a lot. And,
okay, thanks, Sarah.
Long live the great state of Jefferson.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. We're coming back with you in 2 minutes with Brian Foster from up there in Yreka. This is Siskiyou County Update Day. He watched the Forest Service doing some stuff that I think is going to make your head explode. So hang with us. We'll be right back.
I'll go find a network to treat me right. Y'all can take the change and stick it out of sight. Don't tread on me. Don't you tread on me. We're gonna take back our country. Well, it used to be easy, get a place, build a house. Now the EPA said, no, that's the home of the blue mouse. Don't tread on me. Don't you tread on me. We're gonna use some common sense and we're gonna take back our country. Keep my freedom, I'll keep my guns. Try to keep my money and my religion too. Try to keep on working, try to keep on smiling. I will keep my Christian name and y'all can keep the change.
Classic.
I'll keep my hero.
Welcome to Politically Incorrect Radio.
Gotta love it.
We are being joined by Brian Foster, city councilman from up there in Yreka, with an eyewitness report, a politically incorrect eyewitness report. No, I don't know if it's politically incorrect, but we can make it that way.
Depends on what side of the political spectrum you're
there
on, I
you
believe,
go.
And who you work for. So, how you doing, Aaron?
Hey, super. Bill's here. Bob's here. We got a full house.
Good morning, Brian.
Sounds like it. Is that Bill?
Yeah. How you doing,
Hi,
Brian?
Hi, Bill. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah.
Well, real quick, can I give a shout-out to Liz Bowen and that whole State of Jefferson movement? I cannot believe it's actually going to the state capitol.
I know, pretty fun, huh?
Letting them have it. This has been a long time coming. Some of you know I was kind of on a different side of this as far as the Republic movement, but never wanted to diminish what Mark Baird and Liz Bowen were doing, the whole pie and politics thing, attended many of their functions, and, you know, this is just so cool that something is finally happening, so.
Yeah, it's been in the works, a lot of stuff going on in the background, but, it's finally hitting the Capitol steps, which is pretty exciting.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
So you guys up in Siskiyou County, you don't even get to have a landfill. Let's just jump in it because we only have a little under 10 minutes. So you guys don't even get to have a landfill. You have to haul your trash. It used to be to Red Bluff, right?
Well, no. Actually, we used to have a landfill.
Right, but they took
it
away.
It started off as a hole and it got built up. Basically, EPA shut us down. And we had to, like many other places, turn into a transfer station. Our garbage, for all intents and purposes, ends up in Laughlin, Nevada, out in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
So that's got to be cost efficient.
Out in the Nevada desert.
And that's for the whole for the whole county, anybody, or actually for the municipality, correct?
Correct. That's for North County. South County has Black Butte in Weed, and I think there's one in Tule Lake, and that is about it. And considering Fiscus County is two-thirds the size of New Jersey, that's kind of a long haul.
Yeah, but, no kidding.
Yeah, that's it.
So
that's all we have.
So while you were at the they all have they have transfer stations in those three places, and all of it gets hauled to Laughlin, Nevada.
As far as I know.
Great.
Some of it may go to Red Bluff and get transferred onto another load, but it ultimately ends up in the middle of Nevada in another hole.
Super. So this is kind of like redneck radio. So when you were at the transfer station yesterday, what did you see?
Let me tell you this story. I was up in I got a little dump trailer for my construction business, and Saturday is dump day, so I go on out there. You know, it was about 3:30 yesterday afternoon. And go dump my trailer, and pulls up right next to me is a garbage service, a transfer service from Scott Valley. And they have a very large dumpster, probably 30-yard dumpster on their truck, and they're dumping it. Well, it was obviously being used. Once the contents fell out, you could tell this was obviously used on a fire. A lot of refuse, a lot of big boxes. But mixed in with the garbage was something that just made my blood boil. And that was entire unopened cases of Gatorade, still wrapped in plastic. Cases of toilet paper, still wrapped up in plastic. Some of them broke open, so there's rolls everywhere. There was packages of chips from people's lunches. There was, I mean, a fair amount of food material, non-perishable items, brand new, still in packages, mixed in with the garbage and dumped. And you kind of wonder if they were strategically dumping it late in the afternoon. You know, you can have all sorts of theories about why was it there at this time. But the fact is, kind of ticked me off. So right off the bat, I make a phone call. And that happens to be to you, Aaron. And
surprise!
Trying to get my congressman to do something, or at least hear my cries. I also took to social media and vented my frustrations. Kind of interesting is there seems to have been something put into motion. I believe our former Scott Valley County Supervisor, Marsha Armstrong, made a call to the head of the Klamath National Forest, and she called the incident commander. The incident commander's response was, well, we have donation boxes for this stuff, and if it doesn't get picked up, we just throw it away.
So we jumped ahead a little bit. This all came from a fire area from the Forest Service firefighter camp.
And they're still
correct.
And
I guess
still,
I should put some more information. We have several.
They're still fighting those fires, though. You know, there's still other fire
they're still
camps.
Burning.
They are still burning. The Scott Valley fire is still kind of, some of it's in mopping up. Some of it's still trying to be contained. We have still a good fire burning in Happy Camp. There's still several. There's smaller fires all over the county that are kind of in remote areas, but they still have fire crews on them. So
the incident commander was
happened to come from. I'm going to assume it came from the Quartz Valley fire or up in that region.
And what did the incident commander have to say?
Well, from what I understand, the incident commander said we had a donation box for these items to be picked up or donated or basically to be hauled off by whoever was interested in taking these materials. But he was going to look into how they ended up in the dumpster. And that's as far as it's gone.
Well, because they could have left it, when we were talking yesterday, they used a school for an emergency evacuation, and that...
Well, no, actually, they used them as bases.
Right, but, I mean, they used these things for the fire. They could have left all those materials there, and couldn't the school have used them?
You would think, kind of government-to-government.
Yeah, school could have used them. They could have distributed them out to the public.
Well, fire season isn't over. There's still other
shelters,
fire camps. They're going to have to buy more.
Medical centers. So how much volume-wise, I mean, this 30-yard dumpster, how much would you say was dumped?
Of garbage in total?
No, of the reusable things that you saw. I mean, was it like 5 cases of Gatorade and a box of toilet paper, or was it, you know, sizable amount?
It was probably like 5 cases that I could see.
Oh, and the rest.
And then the toilet paper, probably 100 rolls.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's not like you can't leave that just for the school to use or something.
Absolutely. And, you know, considering the impact and, well, in the locations that they were occupying. And don't get me wrong. I'm as thankful as everybody else that the firefighters come and they do their job and they put out fires.
Let's not put this on the firefighters, because they are doing a hell of a job.
Yeah,
they are doing a hell of a job. Their job's hard. But, you know, this goes into a history of, you talk with former firefighters, current firefighters, that it's too expensive to haul equipment off the hill. So what do? They dig a hole and bury it. Pulaski's, McLeod's, you know, all your line equipment, barely use chainsaws, go in a pit. Now, granted, this is all hearsay, but rumors have perpetuated for years that in order to get new equipment, they just throw it away.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But we could do a whole show.
We've heard that a bunch of times. So, you know what, we'll kind of get to the bottom of that, but the idea that brand new supplies are being thrown out in the middle of all this and in an area where people could really use it is a
crime.
Yeah,
travesty.
Siskiyou County's, you know, high depression rate. So.
Exactly.
Well,
Brian,
thank you for the update.
The eyewitness dump report.
We will get on it.
Well, one of these days you need to call me about the casino.
Oh, we're going to do a whole thing on there, and that'll be landfill madness too.
Yeah, won't it though?
Thanks, Brian.
All right. Well, thank you both.
See ya. Join us online, WeThePeopleRadio.us. Programs are all archived there. Thank you, Robert, for that. And Bob, take it away.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, Bill. This is KCNR Shasta Redding.